Good morning, and welcome to the Parenting Pathway Podcast. We weren't trying to make it sound like that. It just sort of worked out that way. As a part of Family Ministries, this is our attempt to speak on topics of interest today, primarily to men, although women and wives would certainly be interested in this topic as well. We are going to be using The Way of the Wild Heart by John Eldridge as a springboard. We're not really doing a book report because I couldn't get these guys to actually finish reading the book. There's very few actual pictures, and the vocabulary is actually adults. So I didn't want to push anybody too far. But we're using this book, which I actually appreciate this book very much. It's kind of his follow-up to Wild at Heart, which was speaking to the heart of men. This is speaking to, in essence, how to speak to the heart of your son and bring him into the tribe of manhood. And I'm David Carl, the pastor of Family Ministries here at Stonebriar Community Church. And to my left is the lovely Nathan Kosirik.
Hello there, Dave.
And what do you do here?
I am the high school pastor.
Wow, that is quite a voice.
Right. Thank you. I'm dealing with a little bit of congestion, and I'll do my best not to make it awful.
So you didn't have to say that. You just would have thought that you were like 7 feet tall.
Is that why you were walking around looking door handles
and hairy?
Like, yeah.
Sounds like I got through second puberty.
You could be a wedding DJ with that voice.
Or a late night DJ.
Late night FM station.
It's not a bad idea.
And what do you do here at Stonebriar?
High school pastor.
Nathan Kosirik, and this is the Book of Songs.
Pretty much whatever that entails.
Keeping out of jail.
That's number one.
Okay, good. Going around the table, we have Pastor Ren Nelson.
Hello.
And what is it that you do around here that you're supposed to do? I don't want to know. It's another podcast.
Pastor of the fifth and sixth graders. Junction 56.
We affectionately refer to as Junction 56 around here. And you've been here for how many years?
0.4 years.
So started what, November?
November.
November. So yeah, we are thrilled to have Pastor Ren on our team. And our other newbie, which is like, what, 4 years?
Yeah, pretty much.
So Pastor Brandon Fletcher, and what is it that you do around here?
I am the young adult pastor here at Stonebriar Community Church.
And describe to me what that means. What is young adult here?
A lot of insecurity.
Not for you. I mean, what?
Our young adult ministry runs from 18 to 35, whether married or not. And just something new that we're building, trying to get some connection with the overall makeup of the church and outside the walls of the church.
Fantastic.
And can I ask Dave if that is Brandon's real voice?
His normal speaking voice. He just sounds handsome, doesn't he?
He really does.
Yeah. I like to hear him talk.
A face for podcast.
Continuing around the circle is Pastor David Ake. What do you do here?
I am the junior high pastor. He gets grades 7 and 8, and we focus on the spiritual growth of middle schoolers as they trumps through the chaos of puberty and various body odors and trying to figure out the world.
I glided through junior high elegantly, just so that you know up front. It was actually you actually don't want to peak in the seventh grade.
You don't.
You don't want to be the best seventh grader ever, because then after that, it's like downhill.
And put your head down and stomp on the gas.
Describing my life. So.
All right, gentlemen, let's get to the topic at hand. As we're discussing, the theme of this book is, in fact, pulling, and he uses the word initiation, getting boys, our boys, boys that are biologically not ours, mm-hmm. On occasion, a 34-year-old, perhaps going on 14. What can we do? How can we assist? How can dads assist their own sons in initiating these young men so that they will one day be called men by other men and that they will feel it themselves? So in the point of that, I would love for each one of you to just briefly describe your experience with that, with your dads. Was that accomplished? Was that done well? Was it completely void? Yeah. I think around this table we probably have several distinct and unique aspects of this.
Yeah, I like that concept of initiation because it speaks to intentionality and doing something on purpose. My mom and dad split up before my first birthday, so I was raised by a single mom in Houston. My dad was involved quite a bit, and there was never any question whether he loved me and cared about me. He was very faithful and reliable to drive from his small town in South Texas up to Houston to where I lived in an apartment in the city. And he would come every other weekend, pick me up on Friday night, and then bring me back home on Sunday afternoon. And so that was my early childhood. And what he was really good about was demonstrating a strong work ethic. So a lot of times we would go fishing, we'd go camping, we'd have a lot of fun on the weekends together. But other weekends, we just worked. You know, he was a mechanic all his life. Sometimes we were working on the car. Sometimes we were working on the house, the yard. But just watching the way he lived his life and the way he would take time to care for other people was in some ways a unintentional initiation into manhood.
Do you think he was imagining these things that we're going to be doing this weekend is going to move my boy toward manhood, or was he just trying to get the lawn mowed?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there must have been some intentionality in that. I think he knew that spending time together, whether we were camping, fishing, or working, was going to have the effect of teaching me some things about what it meant to be a man.
And so you really never knew any other pattern. That was your normal.
That was it. And it was schizophrenic because then I would be returned to the city,
right,
into the world of my single mom. And she's great. She did a great job.
But clearly.
I thank you. Yeah, obviously. he just wasn't in the home.
Yeah.
And I realized later how much I desperately missed out on.
Interesting. Pastor Wren.
So my parents are also divorced, remarried, but that didn't happen until I was 18. So really, I had quite a bit of stability and a consistent parenting, both from my mother and father, through all of my developing and upbringing. My dad was also, looking back, very good at, we would spend father-son time. We'd spend time, that was a lot of times outside. We'd go do things. He was, involved. He was, the coach for a lot of my teams, baseball and stuff like that. Pretty consistent. There was a unique relationship between me and my dad versus my mom and I. It was kind of that, you know, we would do these things or activities, whether it be working, doing stuff outside, sports related, or other stuff like that. And I don't know if it was intentional for him, you know. Oh, you know, today I'm gonna get an axe out, and Ren's going to learn how to chop wood, and that's going to really develop a foundation of masculinity for him. But I think whether that was intentional or not, my dad was there, and did, I feel like, develop a pretty strong foundation. I didn't feel, I didn't leave that realm of my life, or even after my parents got divorced, wanting. More from that. So I'm very thankful.
Good.
From my dad.
Pastor Brandon.
It's interesting, the theme of divorce that's going around, because my parents were divorced at the age of when I was 18. But it was very interesting. My dad was present. We did a few things, and, you know, he'd come to my games. He'll go in the backyard and do a few things with me. But I do remember him typically coming home, you know, vegging out on TV, just like me. He had chores and stuff lined up for me. And he had discipline instilled. Both my mom and my dad were in the military. But one thing was very interesting, that my father had suffered abandonment from his father when he was young. So he was only teaching me what he figured out while he was growing up, you know, and it wasn't sufficient. It was more street mentality, things of that nature. So he really was being a husband and a father, not knowing how to be a husband and a father. It was after my parents had divorced, after I went through college, and after I come up here to Dallas to go to seminary, where I got to stay with him for a little bit, where he started apologizing to me. As he had learned how to become a man and how to become a father, as he had grown in Christ, and he was just like, you know, I didn't disciple you well. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like, what are you talking about, man? I'm pretty great, you know. But
so clearly he had work. Seriously. Undone.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. But it was honestly probably about 2 years after having that conversation with him where I started to realize, oh, I see what he's talking about. You know, where I started to see my own deficiencies that he had discipled into me. And things that I've now changed, definitely, and with our interactions and how we operate now, where he's definitely poured into me and giving me affirmation, guiding me as a man at an age where I'm, you know, I was in my late 20s, I'm in my 30s now, to where, you know, he has definitely have a shaping on my life right now, where my sister says we're exactly alike, which is really dangerous.
So if I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but from what I just heard, it didn't happen in your formative years.
Yeah.
It happened as a young adult for you.
Yes.
And that relationship was redeemed.
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely redeemed. And it took me seeing him living out what he wasn't living out when I was, you know, in my formative years to realize, oh, that's what he's talking about. Because I'm seeing him do this and I'm not seeing me do that. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, there's where he's saying he's sorry for what he had discipled into me.
Well, what a great example of it's not too late.
Yeah.
You can start now.
Yep.
One of my favorite, I have two favorite Chinese proverbs.
Yeah.
The first one is, Kung Pao chicken is ready.
Absolutely. Oh.
Who doesn't like that one? The second one is, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The second best time is today.
Yeah.
And that, what a great example and an encouragement to anyone listening. I goofed up. I didn't do what I needed to do. And now he's 18 and it's too late. And it's not.
No, no, by far.
What a great story.
Yeah.
Pastor David Ake.
Yeah. Pastor Brandon, just to notice that when you said this is happening now in your late 30s. You forgot to mention that you're single and available. So I just thought I'd throw that out there to the podcast world.
I figured this was going out to all men.
What kind of podcast is this?
That is the question, Dave. Ladies.
All the single ladies.
So all the parents, moms that have aunts, nieces, cousins, sisters. No, wow, what a great, I feel like I'm getting a peek into the world of the people that I just kind of do life and ministry alongside of here. You know, I was my dad's shadow. He was also a pastor and a Bible college professor for the first 12 years of my life. And I was his shadow. I got to go to class with him. I got to watch him do church. I got to watch him care for people. And he was definitely my hero. I wanted to be like him. I fell in love with church and ministry because I just always got to go alongside. And they didn't hide a lot of stuff. If it was, you know, someone coming to faith and that being a point of celebration, I got to watch that. If it was someone being restored, and it was a small town in South Texas where I grew up, and so you know, all the challenges of men and older people, drunkenness and things like that, I got to watch them minister, both my parents and my dad especially, to those people. He was a fantastic apologist and a great speaker. My story is a little unique. Around the age of 12-13, between 12 and 15, you begin to notice the cracks, you know, in your, or the humanity of your parents, specifically in my dad. My mom and dad's marriage began a long, slow decomposition that ended in divorce when I was in my late 20s. But watching that kind of begin and then happen, where they were hanging on by claws and then just eventually it blowing up, had a very unique effect because there was a foundational season where I just was in love with my dad as a boy. He was my hero. And then where that season of, hey, let me now have you do that with me, not just watch me, that's what was missing. And so it was kind of like setting off a little rocket and it just kind of spins out. You know, there was that, there wasn't that guide rod, so to speak, in there. So there was definitely a season of frustration and bitterness, especially, you know, in early adolescence when we hit that point where justice is a very strong drive for us and seeing right and wrong. And so it was easy to condemn him, to be angry with him and to react to who he was rather than, you know, that logical or grace based. You know what? He's a man trying to figure out how to follow Jesus despite his own past, despite his own, you know, shortcomings. So I think the season between 12 and 25, almost 30, even into today, there's seasons that we revisit, especially now with my own kids, where I have to go, oh wait, you know what? I got to go rethink this. I need to find men to affirm, you know, things that were probably foundational but got lost in the chaos of that. So it's been an interesting journey to love who he was, but also to separate and find affirmation, satisfaction, encouragement, and the things that were left kind of half done in the process. And then, yeah, my parents and their divorce and learning how to deal with that. It's very interesting. That's a common theme here within that.
And just to make sure that we're thoroughly confused, because we have David Aukey, mm-hmm. our junior high pastor, and Dave Carl, the family pastor. So I thought early enough, we would have changed our names.
Yeah, if it's quotable, it comes from Dave Carl. If it rambles, it's from David Aukey.
My parents did not divorce. They both passed away last summer. And my dad was in my memory, he was always home for dinner. And I mentioned that one time as an adult, my mom just kind of laughed, like he was on the road, you know. So all of our recollections of our childhood is colored for good or bad. But my dad was always around. I loathed Saturday mornings because when I was a kid in the 60s, there was a cartoon lineup on Saturday mornings.
Oh yeah,
that was amazing.
Right, mm-hmm.
Superhero after superhero, and all of my friends. And in fact, there was even the launch for the new season and the new. And my friends were watching all of that. I was working in the yard.
Oh man,
he would wake us up, my brother and two sisters, Saturday mornings. The boys were outside in the yard, and we had a pretty large yard, so there was plenty to do. The girls worked in the house, and the boys were outside, and for sure we were Southern California, so we mowed the lawn all year round.
Right.
There were trees to be trimmed and bushes to be and we worked
relentless.
Easily till noon.
Right. Was your dad watching the cartoons?
He had no interest in the cartoons. Now, to help, I was occasionally allowed to wear the leather gloves that were big enough to go on my head, but he let me wear them. And when I got, I don't even know what age, that I was able to wear a knife on my belt, because we would use the knife to, you know, trim bushes and stuff. So that helped.
Yeah.
But it was a whooping. And my friends were watching cartoons in their jammies. And I was out digging, and I hated it.
Tell us how you feel about it.
Yeah. Some negative.
Okay.
But your friends are still right now watching cartoons in their jammies.
But those are sweet memories.
Yeah.
And that working alongside. And he was not trying to – he wasn't thinking of my trajectory as a man. It's like, we got to get the lawn mowed.
Right.
So get out here and get to work. But – I saw him work.
Yeah.
I remember specifically watching sweat drip off his nose, you know, and I'm 8. And I was bearing down trying to get sweat to drip off my nose, because clearly this is what men do.
Right.
And I couldn't, you know, it took me a while to do that. But I was watching a man in action.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's what was going on, but it was. And we went fishing probably, honestly, maybe 5 times. But it has been woven through my story.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we did.
Yeah.
Not all that often, but those are seminal moments in my story. So I grew up with my dad as a teenager. He was an entrepreneur and had his own business, and so I was working. I spent a lot of time with him because we worked.
Yeah.
And I got more time with him than my older brother, who was in college at that point. And so I got a lot of time watching how he operated, and a lot of that was very positive. You know, he had a lot of anger. He was, you know, would blow up on occasion. And so there was stuff there too. Like, that I don't want.
Right.
I'm gonna steer away from that. But his work ethic was, you know, kind of out of control, really. Mm-hmm. He had to earn his place on the planet
every day
mm-hmm. or he wasn't comfortable. So he needed to be exhausted at the end of every day, mm. and again I watched that, and that doesn't look like a win to me.
Yeah.
So I want to, and I think in talking about David, you and your father, and I think as you mature, as you are becoming more manlike, you have to deal with, okay, my dad is not a mythical character. There's fractures, there's gaps, that's just really wrong. And you have to decide what you're going to do with that. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that, I would propose that would be an indication that you have not fully matured, mm-hmm. that you are walking around with some fantasy of your father as the perfect guy. Because you need that to be true, and of course it's not.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So when you can look back and say, "All right, that part, that was not. I don't want that in my cart."
Right.
That's a good sign. You're not being disloyal. You're not, you know, being rebellious. And I think part of moving toward manhood is discovering the things that you do want to be,
right. mm-hmm.
as much as the things that you do not.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a good point, Dave, and not to get us derailed talking about our own role as fathers, but I find it very reassuring to know that my sons are going to do the same thing.
Right.
You know, I don't want to pass on those things that are going to harm them or harm the people around them moving forward. So I appreciate hearing what you're saying about not adding certain things to your cart.
Yeah. You mentioned something too about small moments becoming seminal, even when they're not repeated tons mm-hmm. of times. I can remember the one time my dad did apologize to me. And so now moving into the season of being a dad and a parent, of making that a priority, of just being willing to go in and say at the end of the day, man, you know, dad did this today. And he realizes now he needs to apologize for that. Here's why. Mm-hmm. Thanks for loving me for who I am. Just to love you for who I am. That they maybe don't know how to respond yet, but it logs it into that deep memory that it's okay to say I'm sorry. It's okay to say I'm wrong. It's okay to say
that's right.
I'm still figuring this out. And it kind of sets them free to be able to do the same mm-hmm. Within that.
And I recall very specifically my dad never apologizing mm-hmm. for anything. Mm-hmm. And I chose to not. That's not going in my cart.
Yeah. mm-hmm.
I want to be able to apologize to my kids.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them to think I don't know what a jerk I am. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time with me, and I know a lot of jerkness that you don't know about yet. So, in the book of our topic today, The Way of the Wild Heart by John Eldridge. I'm going to read a brief passage here. That sounds like scripture, doesn't it, if I say passage? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes it sound too important.
Should we stand?
There's a little section, little paragraph that I want to read from the book that I think will guide our next portion of our discussion. And he refers to partial men, mm-hmm. which as a family pastor, I spent a lot of time with partial men. And so I'm going to read this as interestingly as possible. So, partial men, boys, mostly walking around in men's bodies, with men's jobs and families, finances and responsibilities. The passing on of masculinity was never completed if it was begun at all. the boy was never taken through the process of masculine initiation. That's why most of us are unfinished men, and therefore unable to truly live as men in whatever life throws at us, and unable to pass on to our sons and daughters what they need to become whole and holy men and women themselves. Hmm. There's some combinations of words in there that, I mean, I fire like a flare in my head. Unfinished men, hmm. partial men, boys walking around in men's bodies.
Yeah, hmm. and the harm that mm-hmm. causes to the people that they are to be responsible for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, especially as it builds off of something you had said earlier, right, leading into that passage that masculinity.
You said passage again.
I know.
That pericope.
There you go.
That's so that much paragraph. More casual.
Yeah.
I like
yeah, that. Just earlier on in the chapter where he said that masculinity is not achieved, that it's bestowed. And that really hung in my head for a long time after reading that, because first he follows it up with saying, hey, if you haven't finished your hardening in process or the tempering process, so you're walking around like soft metal, there's cracks, there's fissures, there's deficiencies. Second is there was almost a little mourning process that went on. Well, wait a minute, I want to finish this. How do I go about doing this? Mm-hmm. Where do I find men to either affirm me or an older guy to kind of finally do that Obi-Wan, you're a guy or you're a man or you're ready to go face battle experience.
This is the stuff of the most popular stories and movies of all time.
Oh yeah,
it is. It is like in our spiritual DNA, we ache for it. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to men's groups and I ask them, and when did you realize, what was the moment that you knew you were a man? And I have yet to do this with a group of men where there's not a squirming silence. Mm-hmm. And then there's always this guy in the room, and thank goodness for this guy, but there's one in every group, and he finally says, I don't know, but it hasn't happened yet. And everybody bellows in laughter because they can't take the pain any longer.
Right.
And then they settle down, and if it's a small enough group, guys will like, what are you asking, Ellie? You mean like driver's license? Mm-hmm. First beer?
Yeah.
Sex? What? Help me understand what you're asking.
Right.
They don't understand the question.
Right.
So there's certainly men that know that they're incomplete, that their process
Yeah, there's
is
like
not,
a visceral understanding of that. Yeah.
And then there's guys that don't know that process even exists,
right,
and that they should be a participant in it.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting, every once in a while you bump into a guy who's had a slightly more successful relationship with his dad, who's had that affirmed in him. Mm-hmm. And it's like finding an oasis in the desert. You're like, tell me about this.
Right.
And it turns out a lot of times they just hung out a lot more, you know, over time and did some things together. Mm.
Well, it's interesting because, Nathan, you said something, and it ties along with this unfinished man thing, but the danger of being an unfinished man, right, that's being launched out into the world, something that I took part in myself in going to college. And after coming out of everything that I did in college, you know, all of that, I realized with the pain that I had caused, pain that had been inflicted on me, you know, you're going to either intentionally or unintentionally disciple something out of your house, period. Oh. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think somewhere along the line, I don't know where this happened, whether it's an abandonment of men or just abandonment of the intentionality of discipleship, there has been a chink in this line of discipleship where we've been continuing to just unintentionally disciple something out of the household that is unfinished product and is causing a lot of harm to different things, while there is also an attack on masculinity in the world. So it's a
one-two punch, isn't it?
It's a one-two punch. It really is a one-two punch. It's almost like, you know, you look at culture and it's interesting. I was watching the new Roseanne remake.
How was that?
You know, it's not that great.
Oh,
it's not that great. But it was an interesting point on there where their grandson came in dressed up, and he was dressed as a girl, and they weren't prepared for it. And the grandfather...
who could be?
Right. You know, and the grandfather was looking at him, was like, is that my grandson or whatever, right? And the daughter came in after the son had left, and she said something. He goes, why is it so bad? She's like, you're just being masculine. And he goes, since when was that been a bad thing to be masculine? You know, yeah. So you have that. You have that attack on masculinity, and you have people being sent out, initiated too early, who don't know what being masculine is, who haven't been a finished product.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see the shaping that's taking place amongst men.
Well, I think that's an interesting concept, in that if you were to use the word masculine, it's derogatory.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a threat.
Yeah.
The word itself imposes I'm going to overpower you.
Right.
And our culture has done that, but that's not the way the word is supposed to be used.
Right. Right.
Now, a grown man with the emotional capacity of a 15-year-old boy who has resources, money, can do whatever he wants, he's going to run around like a kid with weapons.
Right.
Yeah. You don't know what this guy's going to do next.
Absolutely.
And if he's big and powerful, he's even more dangerous.
I can think of some examples.
They're in the news all the time. And and unfortunately, our culture, we actually celebrate that. We admire, he gets to do, he's so successful.
Right.
He gets to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
He's a man.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody's going to tell him what to do.
Right.
And that is why masculinity is a fearful word.
Right.
We don't, as a culture, we don't trust men.
Mm-mm.
The more masculine they are, the more they are going to be oppressive to the weaker, when the definition of masculine,
right,
which needs to be talked about,
it absolutely
reclaimed.
Does. Yeah, exactly.
Is I exist to take care of the people, and to quote Tony Evans, in my domain.
Yeah,
my domain is my area of responsibility.
Yeah,
and my job is to sacrifice my time, my desires, my energies to take care of those people in my domain.
Right.
Now, I may not be responsible for people in your domain, so I'm not responsible for everybody.
No.
But my job is to sacrifice for the benefit of the people in my domain. Now, if that was the definition everybody understood, we'd be storming the universities saying we need an entire degree program on masculinity because we don't have them.
Absolutely.
And nobody would be afraid of that definition of a man.
No.
I would love more sacrificial, smart guys who are taking care of other people. That would be...
Yeah. But it's the abuse of masculine power that still resides, I think, in our collective memory as a society that has swung so hard the other way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You hear stories of people who grew up in a home with a tyrant for a father.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so then another generation of men come up believing that masculinity is equal to that.
Abuse,
right.
So the most dangerous thing in the world is a powerful man.
Yeah.
Consequently, let's encourage men to be not masculine and to be powerless.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Describes where we're at,
and that's right. And we get what we got.
Yeah. I remember Dr. Evans talking about humility and defining it, as it was talking about I forgot who was talking about being humble, but he said humble is power submitted or under control.
Under control.
Yeah, there we go. Under control. And he was referring to the he used an offensive lineman analogy, and he was like, you know, those offensive linemen, biggest guys on the field. He was using the Chunky Campbell soup commercial, and he was like, his mother sitting up there telling her son, who is an offensive lineman, shut up and eat your Chunky Campbell soup. And he's like, if you're looking at her, stature doesn't dictate that she has power over this man, but his submission to his mother, you know, his power submitted. And that was just an incredible insight looking at that.
And we love that guy.
Yeah.
We love a powerful man.
Yeah.
Whose mom
yeah.
can straighten his collar.
Absolutely.
Like that's, oh, how sweet is that?
Right.
That's,
right.
But yeah, the abusive man has been equated to masculinity, mm-hmm. and we need to take that back. That is an aberration.
Hmm. Dave, can I go back to this idea of unfinished
yeah.
men? As I read that section of the book,
I'm glad you read
not
it.
The whole book.
Yeah, well, just I didn't that want section. To refer to it as a passage,
right? Because that would right. be presumptuous.
No. Yeah. yeah. Right. So I started thinking about spiritual maturity, and I don't ever want to say that I have arrived.
Never.
You know, that there's nothing more for me to learn, that I can't become more mature. I've heard Bible studies and sermons on this topic. You know, how do you know if you are spiritually mature? And I feel like there's a similar question that can be asked about whether we can know we are a finished man. And so I'm not sure if that connection is present in Eldridge's train of thought.
Yeah.
Did any of you run across that same
like
question?
How do, you, yeah. how do you know a man if you meet one in the wild kind of a thing?
Well, yeah, I kind of, so. I don't know if this is the same thing, but when I saw the word, I nationally, you know, unfinished, I'm like, well, that's everyone. And I kind of redefined it in my mind as, you know, in the stage of life that you're in, you know, you're immature.
Yeah,
and that's what I was looking at. Immature. You should. There's. We should be at different levels of maturity. Like you should be eating milk, but yet you're still on meat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be eating meat, but yet you're still.
You know what you mean.
You know. So I did kind of run into that and just thinking. I was like, well, what is a finished product? What is a finished man? And more so, I just felt like it is a man that is mature in the stage. You know, they line up with it. You know, if you got a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, he's running the streets and doing everything you would see a 17-year-old doing, kind of like the guy who, it's a horrible analogy, but not really, when you're in high school mm-hmm. and you got the guy who's graduated 3 years ago who's still at the high school party with his letter.
You're like, so bro, Matthew McConaughey.
You know, you're like, dude, you're not finished. You know, you're immature. And that's kind of what I got in my mind and just reforming his language in there. Yeah. I don't know if that touches what you're saying.
Well, as you have a baby, you... If you are smart, you should panic because you're not ready for this.
I can attest to that.
And you will often go to a bookstore or someone will give you this gift and it's what to expect, why you're expecting, what to expect in the first year.
So that's for girls to read.
So that
okay. It's not masculine.
It's what to expect when you're expecting?
No, it has like knives and guns
okay.
and stuff.
Okay. The picture side.
But then you at least know, like, okay, so by 3 months... My baby's does, you know, that, what I'm expecting, oh, that comes in 9 months. And he's at three, so whew.
No.
Or, yeah. Oh, my goodness, he's not sitting up, and I need to talk to – you have some metric
yeah.
by mm-hmm. which to gauge either success or failure.
Yeah. yeah.
So what would be some diagnostics –
That's true, yeah.
Of manhood, because we're talking about stuff that we kind of admit most – people are struggling with, you know, I'm not that. What is it?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And it's for the lack of a definition that you have to make one up.
Yeah,
right.
If you care at all, if you even care to make one up. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, mm-hmm. you're going to come up with something wrong.
Absolutely.
There's no chance on your own you're going to come up with a great definition.
Yeah. yeah.
And so a boy growing up without a father or with a bad father will come up with a man is equal to power, mm-hmm. and that would be I'm going to be a monster. That's right. My goal in life
right.
is to dominate everybody around me. I'm going to be so successful in one thing mm-hmm. that nobody can tell me what to do. Yeah. I mean, what you come up with on your own is going to be some kind of monstrosity.
Right.
So I would propose that one of those things is. I live for the benefit of the people around me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And now we're getting into purpose.
Absolutely.
What is my purpose, which is a huge question. Mm-hmm. And the lack of purpose results in all kinds of chaos and harm and abuse.
Oh, yeah.
And I would propose also that a man that does not know his own purpose and would have to be given to him, if he doesn't have it, there's a gravitational pull for him to conclude, my purpose is my comfort and my pleasure.
Yeah, yeah.
So is that a distinction that you're making between a, maybe a self-determined vision or goal versus them having a more broad-based purpose, like understanding, like, this is my significance as a man versus, because that, in what you were saying about unfinished men, it's easy to set a goal and then you kind of align your purpose with that. I'm going to be rich, powerful, successful, satisfied.
Sure.
You know, I'll have stuff and that will give me purpose. So you're saying there's a broader definition there.
Yeah. And you may know what your purpose is or you may not know, but you have one.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like the default is self-glory.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And you may not be intentionally
thinking those words.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But that's what it is.
Yeah. And that's a monster in the making.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And a man to be feared. The more successful, more powerful he is, the more he is to be feared by almost a mathematical outcome. Mm-hmm. Back to the, you know, what is the polar north? I want to be... One of the monstrosities is a full-grown man acting like a 12-year-old. To find a 12-year-old who's self-centered, has no personal hygiene, and thinks he's the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, lives for his basic instincts.
We call that a healthy junior high boy.
Yeah,
right. That's not bad.
Right.
Yeah, when you're junior high.
When you're 12.
It's adorable, actually.
Yeah.
When you're 34... Right. That's not cute.
Yeah.
That is really, and they make movies about this, and, you know, they're almost always, you know, Will Ferrell, but
it's... That was actually the guy that was in my head.
Yeah. You know, it's tragically funny, but it's not funny.
Yeah. In the real life.
Yeah.
And, you know, so back to the purpose, I exist to take care of the people around me in a broad sense, and you know, I'm going through books and quotes in my head, but part of my job is to be the priest for my tribe.
Yeah.
I'm not only supposed to make sure they have enough food to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
I need to do that.
Right.
I also need to be pointing them toward God.
Right.
Using all of the stuff all my tools, all of my gifts, all of my, and if I can't, if if I come up short, I'm going to you, because I need you. Because my job is not to be the guy, the only guy that they need. Mm-hmm. It's to be the guy who's going to help them.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. So you don't get everything from your dad, but what you do have to get is that sense of purpose and identity. Hmm. And I think one of the things that he touched on in the book, actually more than touched on, emphasizes that concept of the beloved son. And if we don't get that piece from our father, then we really do find ourselves in a stuck place moving forward.
Right. Yeah, and I love that you just said identity, because that's the key. Like, you have to give them the skeletal system, the framework for everything else, the organs, you know, the nervous system, everything to attach to understand, hey, son, you may be an artist, you may be whatever, you may not like the wilderness, but at the end of the day, here's what you have to base all that other stuff on, is that you're caring about other people and that you're not this complete self-centered jerk walking around like, hey, look at me, I want my way, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, you know. No, and I love that, you know, pointing to God, because that's what we see in Christ when he came, right? Mm-hmm. Christ was completely concerned, that's his purpose, was for everybody else. He's living for the Lord, and his purpose was to serve everyone else, right? So I love that identity that we must hold to, and then everything else is, that's the launching pad for that, right? So that's just incredible, hearing that identity.
So I hear three concepts kind of being tossed around. First, purpose. You know, I have this overarching universal identity. Two is affirmation, or that like speaking to the heart, you said, the beloved child.
Yeah.
And essentials, like a basic, like, I love the term you used, basic framework. And I think it's been kind of interwoven, but I'd almost throw in the word seasons, Mm-hmm. You know, Dave mentioned just a minute ago, you know, being 12 is a good thing for a season. You're growing and you're going through the same cycle again. You're understanding your purpose. You're getting the essentials. You're affirmed. And then you launch into that next season, not completely prepared. And I think that's something that we need to embrace, that we're not going to know everything. And there's a certain amount of restlessness, irritability, and discontent that will help us in the hunt to grow into that next season of manhood. And finding both and Ren, just to affirm what you said earlier, like God will provide both the people and his presence for that to happen if we seek after him within that. So while we mourn not having certain things, we continue to push forward in that, so that because God will provide the men, he'll provide the knowledge or the wisdom or the information or the experiences, the affirmation.
I think wanting to kind of bring this around, if you recognize yourself as living exclusively for your own comfort and pleasure, freak out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you are not caring for the people around you in any way, if the people around you are viewed by you as people who are going to assist you in your comfort and pleasure only, freak out. Mm-hmm. If God, if he's a part of your worldview at all, if his role in your life is to help you do better, by all means, freak out.
Yeah.
Because you are flying upside down.
Yeah.
There's the story of the jet fighter pilot,
right,
who's so strapped in and flying so fast that he pulls up sharply and he dives into the ground. Because he did not recognize that he was flying upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing the safest thing he could imagine, pulling up sharply, actually killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't recognize the condition that he was in.
Right.
So if your condition is you are living solely for yourself, the people around you, you either like them because they help you feel better about yourself, or you dislike them and punish them because they are not helping you feel better about yourself, you're upside down.
Absolutely.
And you cannot correct this by yourself.
Yeah.
So if you are in some state of that, what am I going to do? I've just recognized my whole worldview is a mess.
Yeah.
And I can't correct it because I don't even know. I'm about to pull up into the ground.
Yeah.
If I make a sharp course correction, I may kill myself and take out my whole family in the process. What do I do?
Well, and I think that gets at the purpose of why Eldridge wrote this book. You know, I think he's trying to help men get their bearings.
Right.
You know, figure out, okay, where am I at this point? What seems to be lacking? How do I find those men who can help initiate me into biblical masculinity?
Mm-hmm. I think that's, I mean, what am I supposed to do? If I find out, and how disturbing to find, like yesterday, I thought I was doing fine, and I'm about 2 weeks away from getting everything I want.
Right.
And I just discovered I'm upside down.
Yeah.
I need to go find men.
Yeah. Right. He tells that story of wanting to learn how to fly fish.
Absolutely. That was incredible.
Wasn't that a good story? Yeah. And so he goes, I don't want to, you know, spoil the book. But he goes down to that river, and he sees a guy who knows what he's doing. But how many of us are just going to have the humility to walk up to a guy who knows what he's doing and say, hey, can you teach me how to do what you're doing?
Exactly.
Because I don't know.
Right.
I mean, would that be great if we were that humble? But he's over there struggling, and this guy offers to help.
Yeah.
And he did have the good sense and the humility that I probably would have lacked to say, yes, please.
Help me.
Well, it's funny because that goes back to the premise that we started with is you're not a man until someone says you're a man.
Right.
So I need to become a man. Will you help me become a man?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's part of the diagnostic.
Yeah.
I'm not a man. That's a bad day. But it's a good day.
Yeah.
Because now I'm not okay with this. I'm going to go do something to correct this condition.
Right.
And our instincts are, I'm not going to let anybody know how deficient I am. But if you want it badly enough, I will go find, you know, this guy was an expert. He was a professional fisherman. You know, I don't know that we're going to find that guy, but I want to find someone who's further along than me.
Right.
And probably that means older than me.
Right.
Because, you know, two 34-year-olds going on 15, they're not going to navigate very well. So let's find somebody, and you can survey your world, your church, and say, okay, that guy, he's got three kids and not one of them has a prison record.
Right.
Yeah.
He treats his wife really, and every man that I've spoken to, there's a little bit of anger.
Yeah.
Where are the older men?
Right.
Why do I not have a mentor yet?
I would
there's some anger. Yeah. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree, and I would even, you know, redefine the guy that we're looking for. That guy may have three kids, one's in prison, but he's still living. He's still loving them, right? There is anger. I love what they said in the book, because now we're touching on, this is good stuff. But he said, we talk about the self-made man in a way that is like cheering them on, right? Yeah. But we should be talking about it in a way that's mourning.
That's not the highest idea.
That's not, right? And there's guys that are upset. I mean, you know, I got with young adults now, I have ladies and men, but we're saying, hey, we're trying to get some mentors here. Where are they?
Yeah.
Where are they? And I'm like, man. Yeah.
And what a clarion call to the older generation.
Yeah.
That while on one hand, like they deride the younger, like, why aren't they following in our footsteps?
Yeah.
That this is also now a rich environment of opportunity that as you've reached your age of maturity, it's still, there's still plenty of opportunity to go back and invest and help another man find his way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think part of that too is having those healthy people that are there, right? You got a lot of 54-year-olds. You don't have a lot of healthy 54-year-olds. You don't have a lot of healthy 40-year-olds that, for the analogy or the story that we're using, that know how to catch fish in the river. They're all doing the same thing, looking at each other, upset because they're not catching anything, right?
And to Dave's point, they don't know they're not catching anything.
Exactly.
There's this self-deception, this lack of awareness. And I feel like every time I have seen growth happen in my life, it has started with the movement from unconscious ignorance to conscious ignorance.
Right.
Where
right.
I go,
yeah.
Holy crap, don't know what I'm doing.
Dave just shook.
You know,
at a family point. Ministries podcast.
Keep going.
And I think about the first time I tried to back up the boat trailer into the water.
Yeah.
Thank God I had my father standing there.
Absolutely.
And thank God he was the one who was shaking his head and waiting for me to throw up my hands and say, can you help me know how to do this?
Absolutely. I think if we step out and ask that question, hey, to somebody who knows better, very embarrassing story. I was moving to Dallas and I was trying to back up the U-Haul into the garage and I was just having a time of it. I was like determined to get it. And my next door neighbor, she's like, you don't know how to do that? And I was like, no, I got it.
Yes, I do.
And her son, who I used to babysit, who was like 20, he's like, he does it all the time. He jumps in the car, throws it in reverse, and drops it over there. And I'm like,
yes. Thank you for pointing out my weaknesses.
Special
moment, man. But I mean, just that humility of saying, you know what, I need help.
But you can't, you cannot progress.
No,
that's when you told her. Moment.
Exactly.
That's when you told her you're not used to the power steering that was in there. Yeah, it was too easy to turn the wheel.
Right. This is a different type of
quote. The quote that you're referring to, Brandon, he says, we often speak of a man who's done this successfully as a self-made man. The appellation is usually spoken with a sense of admiration, but really it should be said in the sad tones we might use for a dearly departed.
Absolutely.
Or a man who recently lost an arm with sadness and regret. What the term really means is an orphaned man who figured out how to master some part of his life on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad.
That's sad.
Sad statement.
It was interesting because when I'm listening to that, I'm like, no, honestly, I had a visceral reaction to say, no, that's not necessarily true. And then I had to think through it some more and I was like, there's a good little meaty, there's some truth there.
So I think we have agreed, a man doesn't know he's a man unless he's told so by a man.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you have not had that, and many, I dare say most,
no,
feel like that is yet to be done, what do? You don't sit by yourself.
Yeah.
You don't go watch action films. I don't think you even go. This is a human to human. This is a contagion.
Yeah.
You have to be touched, perhaps even physically. You got to go fishing with somebody. You have to, and the fish, of course, is that's a metaphor.
Absolutely.
I want to be less like me and more like you.
Mm-hmm.
And until that begins, you're condemned to your own little insulated world of making stuff up as you go.
Absolutely.
And the process is, I'm going to let you point out more deficiencies in me. Mm. I mean, how fun does that sound?
Not fun.
Right. And many men I've spoken to are angry. You know, where are these older guys, these retired guys? Why are they all golfing?
Right.
Instead of and the imagination is some guy, you know, who's just retired is going to come up and say, son, I've been watching you for a while, and you remind me of me when I was your age.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have breakfast?
Right.
I have some wisdom I'd like to hand off to you. You know,
right.
I've never met a guy who feels like he's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No.
I don't have a lot to offer. So I did, maybe I would, but I don't feel like I maybe even got that ever myself.
Right.
So the hubris is, you know, so there are not guys walking around looking to bless younger men with the wisdom that they don't actually feel they have.
That's a good point.
So don't wait for them.
Yeah.
It's the younger man's job to be looking around and saying, I actually want to be more like him. Mm-hmm. And not entirely.
Right.
But there's he's got something I don't even understand. And I want to catch some of that virus.
Yeah.
So I think it's up to the younger man to go and say, I've been watching you. How mm-hmm. freaky is that? I want to be more like you before the older guy starts saying, oh, son, you don't know. Yes, I get all of that. Mm-hmm. You're a jerk too. I get it. But
right.
What I need from you, I haven't gotten from anybody else. Can I buy you a McDonald's breakfast?
Because that's all they can afford.
And then after that first time, perhaps, can we do this regularly? Son, I don't know that I... Yes, you... I need to spend time with an older guy that I can ask questions and even get half answers from.
Right.
That would be sufficient for me. It's better than what I got.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest younger men don't sit around
waiting
to be blessed by some godly man who's looking to have Egg McMuffins every once a week. It's your job to go find that guy. And the guy will be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be flattered. He'll be overwhelmed. He will resist you.
Yes.
Don't give in.
Yeah.
And keep after that guy. And maybe you're going to get, in 6 months, you'll have thought, I've tapped this one out. I got the best stuff he's got to offer.
Right.
But now I need to find a guy who can.
Yeah.
This could be the pursuit.
Yeah.
Is mm-hmm. I am not okay being who I am today, and I am gonna find the guys. And if you're not involved in a church, you're a knucklehead.
Right.
You need to be. Yeah. And in a church, not every man there is worthy of following. You got to be around them long enough to decide. And just because there's a pastor in your title, that doesn't mean that you should follow them either.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get to know people to decide, I want more of you.
Mm-hmm.
And will you bless me
with
time? And that guy can't say no.
Yeah, it's a worthy pursuit.
That would be shocking for the guy to say, mm-hmm. I can't. It scares me. I think most guys would finally give up and say, okay, I don't know what I got, but okay.
Right.
And then it can begin.
Right. I think it'd be healthy, too, to tell that person what they have, right? If that young person sees that person that they're looking at, say, look, I've seen this in you and I need this. You know, what is it that you're coming for?
Yeah, I've seen how you've treated your wife.
Exactly.
I don't do that.
Exactly.
I want to know how to... Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, thought everybody. No, they don't. Huh. They don't. Yeah. I don't.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, we can talk about that, I suppose. And that would. Yeah. But it's you. It's the younger guy. It's the responsibility is yours to pursue to these older men.
Can I give a little, like, if there are ladies listening, this is not me trying to get at them.
And for men,
the responsible man.
Yes, handsome and talented Brandon Fletcher.
So I've been thinking this the whole time. Yeah, you know, even though, like, we're 35 and we shouldn't be living like a 12-year-old, you're going to have to deal with 12-year-old behavior. We're still kids at heart.
This is a warning to the women?
This is a warning to the women. Yeah. This is a no for guys, too. Hey,
pray
for
us.
If you're mad at the fact that you have 12-year-old behavior sometimes, I mean, a fart is going to make all men laugh. That's period. We're going to do this type of stuff. We're still kids at heart.
This is why we go on camping trips.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. I mean, it says in the books, you know, all the stages, whatever. But, yeah, it's just going to happen. Just get used to it.
Thank you, Pastor Brandon.
Yes.
So, yeah, adults, ladies and gentlemen.
So to wrap this up in some kind of a package, in Family Ministries at Stonebriar Community Church, we can summarize this with the statement that we use to guide us. Our polar north is to love God and love others.
Absolutely.
And if you're in pursuit of those two things, you're going to find your way.
Mm-hmm.
But you need help even knowing what that means.
Yeah.
Loving God and loving others. You certainly you need to be involved in doing both of those things. You need to be spending time with God in pursuit of God. You also need to be in pursuit of people.
Yeah.
And people who can help you.
Yeah.
And that's what we are about here. That's how we gauge the success of a program, is not how large or how much money it made, or it's were there connections made.
Right.
Were people, did they feel safe? Were we able to describe Jesus to them in a way that perhaps they had not heard before?
Right.
And that is our intent with this today, and in future podcasts, that is our goal, that we want not to become better-behaved people. We don't want to become more successful people. I don't even know what that means. We want to be people who, well, honestly, we want to... around this table, we want to be the men that some younger man would come up to and say, I need some of what you got.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we would guffaw and say, oh, you know you don't. Brandon would say, pull my finger. Right. And, and they'd say, yes, I need some of that too. I've never done that well. So we are in pursuit of loving God more than we do now. And we're in pursuit of loving people more than we did yesterday. And that's what we are here for. And we are trying to eliminate things that distract us from those two things. And I hope that you saw that, experienced that in our discussion today. And we will plan to come back and we will completely wrap up this whole masculine thing probably in the next podcast.
So, yeah.
So thanks for being with us. And we will see you next time. And don't do life and don't do parenting.